Welcome to MoneyWeb Now. Business news every morning.
It's Tuesday, 19 January. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb studios in Houghton, Johannesburg. On the show today, we chat with Nessun Nayar. I want to talk foreign investors. Put some $14 billion into the JSE in the bond market last week, and also want to touch on that Truba's update, which the market absolutely loved. Brandon Toppin from the FSCA. Do those who withdrew money from Ameritrade International have to give it back? Reports over the weekend saying yes. And Liam Hector from Anchor, macroeconomic drivers boosting JSE and the resource stocks. Yesterday's poll, we asked you if you've ever invested into an S12J fund. 57%? Nope. 12% yes. 9% planned, and a couple of you not interested. Short answer, majority of you are saying thanks, but no thanks. MoneyWeb Now brought to you by Orbvest, global real estate company that has a hyper-focus on acquiring stable, income-producing medical buildings in the USA. Investors use Orbvest's online platform to invest directly into low-risk commercial real estate, primarily in the healthcare niche in the USA, from as little as $5,000. Morning headlines, I from MoneyWeb. Myron Roberts' dispute with Middle Eastern client turns ugly. Myron Roberts has a joint venture. They're a 30% stake, and their account got debited, their bank account, without formal notice, apparently, of almost 2 billion ZAR. There are some lawsuits and the like bubbling there, but this is a business Myron Roberts is exiting, but it's just not proving a clean exit, as is often the case. Business Day, Absin Investec, top picks to lead banking recovery. It's interesting. This is from the local arm of Bank of America. I got to say, most people I speak to, like First Rand and Standard Bank, yeah, they come and say Absa and Investec. Morning markets, US, of course, closed yesterday for Martin Luther King Jr. Day. Asia, very green. Sydney, 1.2% higher. Tokyo, 1.5% up. Commodities, green, with gold at 18.36. Rand, 15.11. And top 40, looking for a green opening, about 0.6% higher.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting with Nessun Nayar now. Nessun, the Truro's update, which actually came at the close on Friday's market, 5 o'clock on the nose, sales down almost 9%, with the UK really taking it hard, off 25%. HEPS expected to be 4 to 9% lower. Stock up 15%. I suppose this is a classic example of the market was expecting it to be a lot worse, and this was just bad, not an absolute horror show.
Yes, Simon, good morning. Absolutely. I think, you know, if you look at what's happened to Truett's and retailers last year, you know, they were seriously sold off in anticipation of horrible, horrible sales updates and, you know, earnings, even losses, to be honest. Yeah. So, you know, with a 4 to 9% drop, I thought it was an excellent result. You know, usually when a company comes up with a trading update on a Friday at 5 o'clock, you know, we just read the headlines and, you know, we hold our heads down in despair. But this was really, you know, a shot of adrenaline that perhaps the retail sector, you know, has not experienced the COVID-19 as bad as what we thought. It helped even lift Fushini. Fushini was up yesterday as well, quite considerably. So I just wonder whether, you know, the market rally has eluded to an extent the retail sector in South Africa. And I'm just beginning to wonder, maybe retailers can you know, get on the bandwagon here if we see similar updates.
Yeah, and we'll get a bunch of them over the next couple of, sort of this week and next, some of the food retailers as well. Pick and Pay not. Pick and Pay don't do updates in terms of their sales, but certainly we'll get a bunch coming through. The other data point, also from last week, reports, and I got this from Reuters, that offshore investors bought almost 7 billion rand of equity, just over 7 billion rand of bonds. That's about a half or maybe a third of a day's value, respectively. But it is a forewarning that the foreigners are perhaps eking back into emerging markets and including ours.
Yeah, I think, you know, with the anticipated stimulus coming, from the developed world, certainly from the US. We've got the $1.9 trillion package now, trillion-dollar package now, and more than likely more to come. A lot of that money is going to somehow find its way into the financial markets, and emerging markets like ours offer great yield. You know, it was a lot better a year or two ago, but it's still on a relative or on a comparative basis to what you can get in the developed world, I think still very good. So I anticipate that, you know, we're going to see much of what we've seen in the last 10, 12 years, you know, more and more money looking for yield in emerging markets like ours.
Yeah, that is a fair shot. A quick last question. Long for Life bringing forward their share buybacks. In one sense, my sense is, you know what, Joffrey's smarter than me, and if he thinks the best thing he can do with their money is buy their shares, fair enough. The other one worries about me, you know, surely Joffrey's supposed to be the guru at finding deals. I mean, which side do you fall on, or is it perhaps a little bit, as always, it's kind of gray in the middle?
Yeah, I think, you know, when he came to the market initially, a lot of people invested not necessarily in Long for Life. It was in Joffrey, yeah, through Long for Life. And the last thing anybody would have thought he would be doing is buying back his own shares. But he could be sending a message to the market that, you know, if you think if you are not prepared, you know, to give me the price benefit, I will apply share buybacks for the benefit of other shareholders in an effort to lift the price. But I was a little bit disappointed by the whole Long for Life story, I thought.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. I think there was a lot of excitement and hype in it. It hasn't come to what we had hoped as a market. Truthfully, probably not what Brian Joffrey was hoping either. We'll leave that there. Nesan Nayar, Portfolio Manager, Sasfin Securities. Nesan, appreciate the early morning, sir.
You've worked hard to accumulate wealth. But with these uncertain times, how can you preserve and grow your wealth in a safer place? Offshore. While earning regular quarterly dividends in US dollars. The solution is here. Hundreds of investors from across South Africa are investing in specialized medical real estate in the USA, sourced by a highly skilled team who make it easy for you. Orbvest SA, an authorized FSP. Visit orbvest.com.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
Chatting now with Brandon Toppin. He's Divisional Executive of Enforcement at the FSCA. Brandon, morning. Appreciate your early morning time. Reports over the weekend, Mirror Trader International, who have been put into provisional liquidation. Allegedly, everything has disappeared. The weekend report saying that those who had withdrawn money from Mirror Trader International are going to have to pay it back. Are you able to confirm the legitimacy of those reports?
Yes, morning. And that is common law in South Africa. So if you're in a participant in an unlawful scheme, the liquidators are in a position to claim that money back and doesn't have a time limit either. If they don't do it on that basis, they'll do it on a basis in certain circumstances of certain of the persons being preferred at the expense of other creditors.
Yeah, this is even, if I understand correctly, it's even your, you know, if you put 100 Rand in and took your 100 Rand out, in other words, you haven't made a profit, even that 100 Rand you took out, you're going to get a claim for that money.
That's correct, in theory. Practically, it obviously costs the liquidators a lot of money and time to go after all the money. So the best bet is for persons to approach the liquidators and try and do an arrangement with them that they only pay back the interest or the unlawful return. And there is cases where liquidators can settle with the creditors.
And this is, yeah, and as you said up front, I mean, the issue here is you know, quite simple. And you know, it's an alleged crime at this point in the process. But you know, if you've made money from an alleged crime, you can't do that. That is just a breach of any sort of ethical and legal process. That needs to be returned and therefore distributed accordingly.
Correct. And I said right from the start to people that would listen that we need to make a good example in South Africa of a Ponzi, you know, because it doesn't happen in many cases. But because this is such a large one, there's going to be people and time and resources applied to it. That, yeah, we can make an example so that the public can actually learn their lesson in this, because there are a lot of professional Ponzi investors in South Africa. They get in early and they bring other people and they try and get out. And nobody comes often. But I think in this case, we're going to see something different.
Oh, I hadn't thought of that. Yeah, I suppose so. Because then it's usually the case, right? That whole Ponzi scheme is, if you're in early, you can actually do all right. And you're suggesting that they're actually people who sort of hunt these out with the awareness that get in quick, get out quick, and essentially take your money and run.
Correct. And yeah. I've heard people tell me that on the radio shows as well. When we talk about Ponzi's in South Africa. Specifically, when people say that, you know, they don't know that it's wrong, etc.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but yeah. The bottom line is, we tell people the whole time, if it's not a FSB approved, you know, don't invest in it through them.
Yeah, I mean, and that's always the easy process. You go to the FSCA website, check if they're there. That was my big claim with Miritrader back in May of last year. Where's their license? They said they didn't need one. I'm like, no, you're taking money. A last point, I mean, one of the issues, we're going to see Bitcoin in particular. I mean, you know, there's lots around Bitcoin, but it does lend itself to this sort of illegal activity simply because the money can disappear. There's not that traditional paper trail you get from banking, and we're going to see probably a lot more of these around the crypto space.
Yeah, well, if you go back through hundreds of years, you'll see that unlawful behavior has always been performed around new technologies, etc., because people don't understand it much.
Mm-hmm.
So it's much easier to pull a false one on people. I'm not a lover of any of the crypto assets, and I personally don't believe in them at all.
Mm-hmm.
But in fairness, the crypto assets are used as much as any fiat currencies are. But at the moment, it is easier. Law enforcement, etc., and people like us, you know, we're still learning how to trace and follow up on crypto assets. So it is going to be used a lot more for the next couple of months, maybe years, than maybe the traditional fiat.
Yeah, and that's the warning to listeners out there. You know, there's a lot that red flags a scam. If it's crypto, you want to be perhaps digging a little bit more. We'll leave that there. Brendan Toppin, Divisional Executive Enforcement, FSCA. Appreciate your early morning.
Business, finance, and investment news. MoneyWeb Now.
With Simon Brown.
On the Money. Also available on podcast.
I'm chatting with Liam Hector. He's a fund manager at Anchor. He sent out a note on macroeconomic drivers, particularly looking to boost JSC performance in 2021. Liam, appreciate your time today. Before we get to the JSC, I mean, those sort of macroeconomic, I mean, the big picture, we've got vaccines that are now being injected into people around the world. We've got a new U.S. president coming in on Wednesday, midday Washington time. Certainly there has been a risk on trade already. I mean, you put a stat in there that the capped SWIX has outperformed the S&P 500 by 14% from November to end of December. The risk on is absolutely out there and happening.
Yeah. Hi, Simon. Thanks for having me. Yeah, I think the higher level points in the piece that I wrote was more trying to get the message across that, you know, as investors on the JSE, the drivers of return are not necessarily totally idiosyncratic to South Africa, and that investors need to see the sort of bigger picture mixed with the smaller or micro picture at the same time in order to create some kind of expectation in terms of what's driving markets and how they see markets evolving over the sort of shorter and medium term. I think South Africans can sometimes lose sight of the fact that there are big external factors that drive even the locally focused shares on the JSE. So things like banks, retail, mm-hmm. insurance. And often, I mean, as you know, I'm based in the UK looking in, and I often see there's overly pessimistic views that often come out from South Africans that are sitting in South Africa that probably aren't paying enough attention to the bigger picture, for lack of a better way of trying to describe.
Yeah, and it's that old cliche, which is a cliche because it's true, which is, you know, the market is not the economy. And I take your point. You know, it you know, sitting here in Johannesburg at the moment, a number of people being load shed, concerns around vaccine rollouts locally, but there's other drivers. One of them that you mentioned is commodities, and commodity prices have done well. We saw a good, a relatively considering GDP number out of China, China for 2020, which sort of underpins a commodity demand. Government's going to be spending the world over on infrastructure. Part of the Biden $1.9 trillion stimulus package. And you're suggesting that our commodity companies are, A, not pricing in the commodity prices at current levels, but they're also certainly better positioned than they have been, I mean, perhaps forever. I mean, those balance sheets of those commodity companies on the JSE are really solid.
Sure. So I think, you know, even going one step further back from that, our views are generally that over the course of this year, the world will gradually improve. Mm-hmm. It may not seem like it at the time, but the reality is that since efficacy results started coming out in early November, the market was able to start looking through the shorter term sort of really dire COVID-19 statistics, and not just in South Africa, which is experiencing its second wave, but clearly in other parts of the world, like the US and Europe, for example. So our view sort of is predicated on the fact that over the course of the year, there's going to be this gradually improving economic backdrop. And at the same time, you know, you've got a change in government in the US. You've got possibly more visibility or predictability from a policy point of view. I think the Trump administration wasn't necessarily all bad from an economic standpoint, but certainly from a predictability point of view, there was often some uncertainty or doubt as to some potential issues that may arise because of brash sort of policy stances that were unexpected. So I think that sort of easing geopolitical tension or creating more political certainty or predictability around the world could create an environment where, mixed with a lot of stimulus, you could get more risk on stance and potentially some dollar weakness, which should prop up commodity prices. And then at the same time, I think an underappreciated factor is just the intensity of the sort of new green economy that on the demand side of some of these industrial makers. So I think you could be in a position where, for the first time in quite a while, there's a positive sort of outlook that you go into the year on commodity prices. I mean, I was brought up in an environment where, you know, we were told that the super cycle for commodities was over and that it was never coming back again. And I mean, you know, if you've been following Anko over the years, as a house view, we tend to gravitate towards growth and quality. So this is not necessarily a sector that we've probably spent a hell of a lot of time on. But we can certainly create some kind of argument for firmer commodity prices this year in commodities where there haven't necessarily been a lot of price firmness over the recent past. And I think going back to the discussions that I have back in South Africa, where so the commodity sectors have really driven the performance of the JSE over the past couple of years. Mm-hmm. So from the standpoint of a South African investor, it might seem like the commodity producers could, you know, be nearing sort of peak margins, peak earnings, potentially overdone. But when you look at it from a global investor point of view, you know, growth has been in favor for so long that you know, there's been other pockets of the market that have really outperformed, and the commodity space hasn't necessarily gotten the kind of attention that you're seeing it get now. Sure. I mean, there's definitely some kind of argument to be made for continued firmness, I guess, in some of these commodity prices. And then, as you mentioned, we think that, you know, should that be the case, the companies are, you know, they haven't been expanding massively. They're not overly indebted like you saw in previous cycles. Mm-hmm. They've been very responsible with capital allocation. So you could get a scenario where the commodity producers, even the ones listed on the JSE, could continue to outperform.
We'll leave that there. You'll find the full note at anchorcapital.co.za. Look under the latest research button. Liam Hector, fund manager at Anchor, really appreciate your time today. This show is brought to you by Orbvest's latest investment opportunity, Medical 29. It's a multi-tenanted Class A medical office building located in Phoenix, Arizona. For more information, visit orbvest.com. Orbvest SA is an authorized financial services provider with license number 50483. Our poll today, Liam was talking about it, but I mentioned it with Nissan as well, is the risk on trade here to stay? Yes, it's real. No, it'll fade. Only time will tell. You'll find that on Twitter under the MoneyWeb MoneyWeb handle at MoneyWeb. Is the risk on trade here to stay? That's it for today. We're live every weekday morning on the MoneyWeb website and the app at 6:30 a.m. The podcast available from 7 a.m. Massive thanks to my team, Eddie and Cordora, to you for listening, my guests for their early morning contribution. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow.
Listen to the live stream of MoneyWeb Now at the same time every weekday. For more business, finance, and investment news, MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.